Hey guys. My internet seems to be a problem. I can't see y'all. There must be something wrong with my vision.
Boo.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a crystal clear edition of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. I am your host, the Marvelous One, the Marvelous Iggy, a.k.a. Ben, whichever way you want to flip it. Joining me, apparently the guy is thawing out now, Brian Powers. Brian, is it thawing out in Boston yet?
We're down to just only several inches of snow now, so that's good, at least in most yards. We're going to have snow banks for months, but we're thawing out. Thank
at least,
God.
Is it warming up a little bit? Is it in the 40s
it
now?
It is. Oh, last week on Wednesday, we hit over 40 degrees, and I'm like, shorts weather. It's shorts weather outside today. 42
that's sad
degrees.
When the 40s are.
Shorts weather, baby.
All right, and of course, joining us after missing last week, Jonathan Cartwright. Jonathan, welcome back.
I am an emissary from hell, and I am so glad to be back from being in hell from being sick. So,
you'll notice the Taser is absent. That's because after all the jokes, John finally tracked him down and killed Taser. So it's unfortunate.
Well, he's not dead. He was scrounging around our dumpster at Burger King today, I think. That's where I saw him out there.
Why would you scrounge around the dumps of Burger King? You can go to Whataburger and get better food.
Oh, well, that's what I ate today.
You don't even know what Whataburger is, boy. Don't even start with me.
I do. That's where I was today.
No, John, no. John, did they have Whataburger in Oklahoma?
Yes. Oh, yeah, several of them.
Okay, I thought it was just a Texas thing. I'd imagine it would be at least a little more likely for it to be in Oklahoma as well. But
I mean, Oklahoma's practically Texas's little sister anyway, so they might as well have whatever the hell that burger is.
Whataburger is delicious. If you ever come down to Oklahoma,
Taser was first, you're next, friend.
All right. Well, we are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel-related. So with that, I'm going to switch to the newest language that I discovered using Rosetta Stone. 3, 2, 1. I am Groot. I am Groot. Which translates to, Brian, isn't Groot getting a new solo series?
Oh, my God. Yes. Yes, he is. it was revealed, not today, the 7th, so it was revealed a couple days ago that Groot, the most talkative member of the Guardians of the Galaxy, was getting his own solo comic book series. Why? I don't get it. Why? He only says three words.
Do we know who's writing and drawing it?
Yeah, it's a guy who's never written a comic book before named Jeff Loveness, who apparently his biggest credit is doing stand-up on Jimmy Kimmel Live.
Hey, and it's being drawn. That's writing.
And it's being drawn by another new guy, Brian Kessinger, who apparently has worked in Disney Animation, so at the very least it'll look pretty.
At least it's in-house. I mean, hey.
Yeah, hey. But this is just so stupid to me. Why would you give...
This is the popularity that is the Guardians of the Galaxy, buddy.
Oh my God. Just, no, look, okay, I still regularly read Scotty Young's Rocket Raccoon series, and Groot is always in it. Just rename that series Rocket and Groot and build it as a team-up book. What is so hard that you have... It's not gonna last! It'll last not even a year.
I'll say 4 issues.
Oh my God. If it gets 6, I'll consider it lucky. But this is just asinine. Why would you do... Like, We were talking before the show started about this, and John made the very valid point that saying Drax is the one who I would want to get the solo series the most. Instead, we've got Star-Lord, we've got Rocket, we've got Groot, we've got Gamora getting her own series, I think around post-Black Vortex. Why?
Yeah.
Why? I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me. Who greenlit this idea? Who did it?
I mean, I agree with you. Like, out of, like, I, like, to me, like, I don't like to be cynical, but I can't help be cynical. But like, how am I supposed to get interested into? Like, the only way you could do it is if you make the world that the adventures of Groot around him interesting. And I don't know if Groot is interesting without Rocket. You know,
it doesn't even matter.
You
I'm
can't
looking at
carry.
The...
Like, are they gonna give him like thought balloons? Are they gonna give him like? Thought inside, like you're gonna get first person narrative through Groot to explain exposition.
Like, can I just briefly read the actual solicit information they gave out?
What does the solicit say?
Please give us the roots of the matter.
Oh, you're gonna burn for that one, buddy. Okay.
I'll be burning Groot tonight on my wood stove. Anyway.
Oh Jesus. Okay. Quote. When Rocket and Groot are on an intergalactic road trip and Calamity strikes, which, right off, that's pretty much the premise of Rocket Raccoon already. So again, why? The two get separated, and for the first time in years, Groot's on his own. Written by comedic ace Jeff Loveness.
Groot is a strong tree that don't know need no man.
Yeah, right? Written by comedic ace Jeff Loveness and drawn by Marvel Comics newcomer Brian Kessinger, get a front row seat for, and the following is in all caps, explosions, space sharks, aliens, and intergalactic hitchhiking. Yeah, baby, you read that right. End all caps. Whatever may be coming Groot's way, one thing's for sure. It's going to be a Groot adventure. End solicit.
The bad puns continue.
Okay, and if you eat... Okay, how much of that reeks like they're trying too hard? I mean, let's be perfectly honest here. Does that not sound like they're just trying a little bit too hard?
It is. That could be just, like, grab attention for solicits for people to order the book, but...
Yeah. And the artwork just looks like a clone of Scotty Young's Rocket series anyway. So again, I ask, why? And the worst part is, I'm getting mad about a book that won't last 6 issues because it's about a protagonist that only says 3 words to each other. Okay. Maybe, apparently, well, I kind of lost my cool there for a second. I'm going to back up now and let y'all say what y'all need to say still.
Go ahead, John.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I guess the Guardians... deal, they just want to branch out their titles and see what might grow, you know. And
John, I have news for you. You're fired. Leave.
Okay. Goodbye.
Don't have time for your office. Don't have time to pack up your stuff. Go.
No, but seriously, I don't understand why they have to give, you know, like you said, Groot and Rocket, just make it the title for Groot to be in. Give Drax his own title, you know. You know, I mean, I think they're going to anyway, the way they're going. Everybody seems to be getting a title.
We have, like you said, Star-Lord, Rocket, obviously, Groot coming, Gamora coming, and then, of course, don't forget Guardians team, and then Guardians of the Galaxy itself proper.
Yep.
So if you couldn't get Guardians, well, here's 5 other titles.
Yeah. I guess they just wanted to, you know, I guess they're trying, since they're going to shrink the X titles, they're going to branch out with the Guardians titles instead. I don't know. I'm not even going to touch. I'm not even going to read that illegally.
Like 4 years ago, like they barely struggled to keep the single solo series Guardians of the Galaxy alive, which is crazy to think about.
Yeah, and now it's like the most popular franchise that Marvel's got.
All because of the movie, not because of necessarily the writing teams behind Guardians of the Galaxy per se.
Yeah, I mean it's not that I don't like Groot. He just cannot support his own title unless they. Do the first person thought bubbles or something like that? I don't even see it going past 1 issue. You know, it shouldn't even be a issue. You know, it should be a backup story in one of the Guardians titles.
Yeah, that I would not mind. You know, especially when they fucking charge $4 for cover price. You like throw a backup, like throw like a 5 to 10 page backup page with featuring Groot on it by himself. And that would have been great. But no, we're going to give Vicky Pay, like, if you won, if you buy this, you must be a diehard Groot fan. And you know, I know they're out there, but I don't see the audience there for a Groot solo series. Maybe, again, I agree with Brian. It should have just been renamed. Like, they should have just ended Rocket, renamed it Rocket and Groot number one, and take your get your money there. Just do that, like they've always done.
But, I agree.
But for some reason, I don't know. It's going. I will not buy this. I will flip through it to see what it is, and go from there. Because I can't believe Groot by himself could sustain a solo series. And I'm pegging it to end at four issues. Not because the quality will be bad, but just because I don't think enough people would be interested in a Groot solo series.
Yeah, it's just wasting, you know, it's just wasting Groot stuff to print it. But sorry, I had to reach there. It's about as worth the effort to make the jokes.
Making trees to print.
Yeah. You know.
Well, what if it's a digital only series and you're not wasting anything?
Well, then that's just wasting internet time. That's either way. But at least it's internet. But God, I just can't. Yeah, I mean, I thought Squirrel Girl was a reach, but, you know, having a title. And they really, I heard that Groot, you know, when you said Groot was getting a title, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Anyway.
All right, so I guess that's all we have to say on Groot getting his own solo series. So let us know what you think of Groot. Maybe it'll explore this. Maybe it's Groot Secret Origin or Groot Year One or whatever. maybe it'll explore his origins, which that could be somewhat interesting depending on how they work it, and hopefully don't
exploring his roots. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Way to go. Way to go, John. Way to go.
Yeah.
Way to go, John.
Someone's got to do it.
Yeah. Yep. who wrote all your lines of dialogue? Arnold Schwarzenegger?
No.
Not even good Arnold, neither. Like Mr. Freeze Arnold.
Kill the heroes.
All right.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
How's that a pun? Speaking of small plug, if you're listening to this now, you can go listen to Mr. Dragon and I's commentary for Batman and Robin. Fitting timing.
Oh, boo! Bad plug. Boo! Hey.
Support me, supports us.
So
either way, let us know what you think about Groot getting his own solo series. But we have more Marvel-related news. Brian, apparently somebody's not attending Comic-Con anymore. Who's not attending? It's not Regis Philbin, is it?
No, I'm pretty sure Regis Philbin will still be there, although I'm not sure how often he was there to begin with.
True. He's always been there. He's just been in cosplay. That's why you never see him.
Over the weekend, someone asked James Gunn via his Facebook page whether or not he'd be attending Comic-Con this year. And he said that he's not certain, and he went on to say that Marvel isn't going, so he's not sure he will either.
Huh.
Well, now, yeah, it hasn't been officially confirmed yet, but it does lean heavily on the fact that Marvel Studios will not be attending Comic-Con this year. And in fact, the Disney event that they plan on hosting will be held a month after Comic-Con in August. So, yeah, there's been no further comment from Marvel about what this means or why they're bowing out, but it seems to me that if you go to Comic-Con this year, you won't be partaking in any Marvel Studios booths or panels or what have you.
Well, I mean, the hype this year is going to be all around Batman v Superman again. I mean, that movie comes out one year from now. 1 year from now.
Is it exactly 1 year?
Almost. Like, I think it's like the 16th or something. Or like, it's, well, almost like 340 days Batman v Superman comes out. So that's going to be the focus. And I don't think that's the reason they're pulling out when I say this. What I'm saying is that Disney has their own powerhouse, and maybe we've never been to Comic-Con, but we've covered news around Comic-Con. A lot of stuff comes out. So much that we're like a month after Comic-Con will come out, I will read something, and I'm like thinking, why am I barely hearing about this now? Oh, it happened during Comic-Con. What? There's just so much of news. And granted, you know, if Marvel makes an announcement, it tends to get top billing at a lot of sites, CBR Newsroom. But But, and I can understand, like, but if you do it your own month with the Disney's, I guess, fronting up the cost, and you don't have to pay, because I'm pretty sure they have to pay Comic-Con for that space, you know, I'm pretty sure that for that time.
Yeah.
So, if you can do it at your own event where you're the center of attention, and plus, when did they show we already know how many movies are coming out, so they have literally nothing to reveal.
That's true.
I mean,
yeah.
Ant-Man, yeah. I mean, Ultra, Age of Ultron comes out less than 2 months. Ant-Man comes out in June or July?
July.
So that comes out either the couple weeks before or during San Diego Comic-Con, so not going to have anything to show there. Then...
Actually, is it August? I think it might be August.
No,
let me look
August.
It up.
It's not August. August is Fantastic Four. I know that. So... you definitely have that. So, and then the next Marvel movie isn't till, which is a long ass wait when you think about it. Till the next Marvel movie,
July 17th. You're right.
So the week of either the week before Comic Con. So, and the next Marvel movie isn't till Captain America: Civil War, which is in April or May. April.
It's usually in. Oh, is it April?
I think it's April for it's one of those two.
Spring.
So, it's spring. So, and plus, we already know all their at least supposed release dates with Spider-Man included. So, I'm not surprised, you know, especially how crowded Comic-Con is becoming. And none of those other movies have started shooting. I don't think Cap 3 has started shooting yet. You know, Cap 3 won't start. They should have started shooting. The movie comes out in less than a year. But I'd imagine they're going to start shooting soon. So, maybe they just don't have anything to show off. You know, or they want to show it off on their own time and where they get all the press, which I don't blame them, you know? I don't blame them.
Mm. What do you mean? I agree.
John, you go ahead.
I agree. It's just that, you know, because I know a lot of people are going to probably be like, how come they're not going to go to Comic-Con, you know? And I'm like, why should they when they're going to have their own thing the month later through the Disney deal? And that way they can just show off everything that they want without having to compete for the attention and stuff, you know, with everything else. And I see it as a good thing for both San Diego and for Marvel. That way San Diego can get somebody else in there to be, you know, for the big, big stuff. And it gives more attention to other things. And especially if people want to obsess over Batman, Superman thing. I think it's a win-win.
Or Star Wars. I guarantee you Star Wars is going to be fucking huge this year.
Oh, no kidding. And I'm getting to where I could care less about the Comic-Con other than, you know, hearing what the news and stuff is coming out because, you know, I'm never going to be able to go.
not even just buying a hotel. Like, that to me is the, well, not even buying a hotel is jumping through hoops. It's like,
yeah, no kidding.
It's like, you have, like... That's why I want to go. Like, I'm with you, John. I want to go, but...
You'd have to get a hotel like two states away and hope that you can...
Commute back.
Beeline in.
That's pretty much what you have to do. Like if it, or even like buying tickets is such a pain in the ass because so many people are buying them. Like, honestly, yeah. I'm going to tell these people right now, and Darth Primus, if you're listening, you can probably agree with me, but if you want the San Diego Comic-Con kind of experience, but you don't want to deal with the hassle... Go to WonderCon. I've been there. It's basically San Diego Comic-Con light, except you don't get all the super crazy lines. You'll get lines, of course, but you'll have video games. They'll have movie, not a lot of movie stuff, but they'll have a good, a small amount of movie stuff to where it's doable to go see things. You know, the year I went, Guillermo del Toro held a private screening of the opening of Pacific Rim, and I got to see that. You know?
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, and Guillermo del Toro was there. So, my advice to you guys who ever want to go to Comic-Con, just go to Anaheim. Just go to WonderCon in April. The weather's nicer. You're right next to Disneyland. And it's probably going to be cheaper on you overall for that convention and hotel versus San Diego, and you don't have to jump through hoops.
I've also heard that New York Comic-Con's a much better venue, too. But, you know, so either way, it just San Diego's gotten way too big. You just so I'm glad to see that maybe certain things are starting to happen to
hopefully
maybe calming it down, so to speak. Yeah.
Oh, that ain't gonna happen soon. But something else will just fill that vacuum. That's still prime real estate.
Yeah, no kidding. So, what about you, Brebra?
I'm of the same mind as Ben. I don't think this is San Diego being relieved of its big britches. I think it is Marvel realizing that they can get even bigger britches now. Because, I mean, let's face it, Marvel can really do no wrong at this point. After Guardians, it was kind of like, well, fuck, they win, you know? They can just print money doing whatever the hell they want now, and we will buy it because it's Marvel. So I think them kind of taking a step back is kind of a move fueled by them realizing that they can just kind of do what they want. Because like Ben said, they announced that whole Phase 3 lineup off-season, like back in months ago at a little independent event that nobody knew about, and they got tons of press coverage on it, you know? Now, that being said, I do wonder what will step in to fill the void, if anything, but I can guess that any elitist Marvel snob will probably, like, sell their ticket now, maybe. I don't even know, so... not a whole hell of a lot else to think, just because, you know, I will never get there in my lifetime. So, you know.
Unless I win the Powerball, that's about the only way.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, pretty much.
You also need the most advanced, fastest computer to actually log on and buy tickets.
Yeah, because, like...
No shit.
And then people, like, you have the scalpers to fight against. It's like, it's not worth that hassle.
Yeah, not when you're
standing in line all the fucking time.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. I hear that, man. I hear that.
I'd be like, screw this, I'm going to Tijuana. All right.
Why Tijuana?
Yeah, let's just get right across the border and you can get some pretty good liquor. And it gets you away from
the phone. But if the water doesn't kill you down there, the cartels will. So it's kind of like...
There's a reason why it's called Montezuma's Revenge.
Oh, I know. It's that blue gold.
Hey, speaking of which, talking about Marvel Studios, Ben, didn't something get released over the weekend?
No, we got a new Ultron trailer!
Oh,
we got a
God.
New... Okay, before we go any further... No more trailers. No more. This is it. Don't overset.
This
is it. No more trailers. Marvel Studios, Joss Whedon, Kevin Feige. I know you're listening to this. Because you have to, because we're the only Marvel podcast.
They're always listening.
Don't show any more trailers. Show TV. If you're going to show TV spots, because I know you have to, show the same shit you show in the trailers. Do not. I don't want to see more. I don't want to become movied out before the movie comes out. Granted, it's easy to avoid sometimes, but still, I don't want to see anything new. Needless to say about this trailer itself, oh my god, this movie needs to be out already. That shot of Ultron sitting on the throne says it all. It says it all about his character. And we got a little hint of Mark Ruffalo or Bruce Banner and Scarlet Witch.
ScarJo and Ruffalo. And
well, I was going to say a code name.
Black Widow
and Hulk. Lovey, which is I mean, they kind of, you know, paired them up a little bit in the first movie, you know, by Natasha being that net for him. So it's interesting. By the way, were those Wolverine's claws?
No, that was Hawkeye pulling arrows.
They did that to fake people out.
How cool would it be like if like they're in the fight with Ultron, Wolverine just comes out of nowhere?
Okay, but can we just say, when they showed Scarlet Witch hexing Black Widow and then Pietro knocking Cap back with a punch, I kind of like was really excited about that.
So it looks like Ultron is going to be using the twins as a means to is going to be the foil against the Avengers, so they won't be on the team. They'll be the villain. They'll be somewhat the villain.
Although, in that last overhead shot, we see Scarlet Witch fighting alongside the Avengers.
Well, of course, we all know they're eventually going to come to the team, but it'll be interesting foil at the beginning.
Mm. Yeah, I really want to see what these kids are all about, what their motivation is.
Did they also show any hint of the Grey Hulk? I heard that they did that.
They won't do anything with the Hulk for a while. Hulk's like toxic to them now. I mean, because
for some, despite that, he gained huge popularity with the Avengers.
Well, I'm just talking about in the movie itself. I heard that there was a rumor that they guess they're going to actually have more of the Gray Hulk popping up at one point, which I'm like, be interesting. But
I wouldn't put much faith in that myself personally. But yeah. I mean, it doesn't make sense because, like, I mean, Marvel hasn't touched Hulk since.
But not speaking of Hulk, how cool was Chris Hemsworth calling out Ultron like that? Is that all you have?
Guy is fearless, okay? He calls out everybody. And he laughs in the face of Frost Giants.
And then Cap has the best part, like how I would do it. And it's like, did you really have to fucking say that? Did you really have to? Okay, let's dance.
The scene where he's trying to pull the car off the collapsing bridge and the bumper breaks off and the car falls. Holy shit.
Yeah, that means people are going to die.
Things are going to get fucked.
They are really setting up the Empire Strikes Back feeling of this movie. I don't believe everybody's coming out of this okay. No,
someone going to die.
Someone's either going to die or like be permanently scarred where it's going to fall out for the rest of the movie.
Someone going to die, okay? Somebody's
going to die, probably Hawkeye or somebody like that.
I really hope it's not Hawkeye. He hasn't even gotten his chance yet.
I like him. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying to.
On a side note, he did confirm his appearance for Captain America: Winter Soldier. I mean, not Winter Soldier, for Civil War.
So there's that, I guess. And then of course the real clincher there at the end, where the eyes open and it's like, it's Vision. It's the Synthesoid. I'm really curious to see what Ultron plans on doing with this guy, though, because, you know, what is the purpose? Wasn't the purpose of Vision originally to infiltrate the Avengers?
Yes, it was. The back in the day, let me get on my soapbox here.
Back in my day.
Okay, since Taser's not here to help either. Back in the day, Ultron had created the Vision and used the brain patterns of a then-deceased Wonder Man to have him infiltrate the Avengers and to try to, you know, be on the inside to help destroy the Avengers. Obviously, that failed, and Vision gained humanity and became a long-standing, you know, Avenger. Yeah. And so they're probably going to do something similar.
It doesn't seem like Ultron's using that level of subtlety here to try and infiltrate the Avengers.
No, he's not like, come here, bitches, I'm gonna beat the shit out of you.
Bend over, okay? Nope.
Bend over, take the pounding I'm going to give you. Now, I have a feeling that Vision's probably going to be somehow going to be related to Jarvis, because I know it's going to be the same guy who did the voice of Jarvis. So probably going to wind up somehow. Jarvis gets the body and he winds up, fighting alongside the Avengers to fight Ultron. You know, have the artificial intelligence versus artificial intelligence type thing. You know, which would mean that again, it'll be Tony Stark doing the creation of stuff instead of Hank Pym in any way, shape, or form. But that's a whole other discussion. But I don't know. There's a lot of stuff they're going to be putting through here, and I can't wait. The Hulk versus Hulk Buster fight alone is going to make me just go, oh.
Oh my goodness, that Hulk Buster fight. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's going to be worth the money alone for me. And I'm having the wife and kids are going to be watching it with me, and they're going and I have a feeling I'm going to tell them you might want to sit back about three or four rows. Get away from me because I'm going to be major fanboy gasming over here. And because the wife, you know, when she's seen the last couple of Marvel films, she's like, do I need to just go ahead and leave you in the movie alone and just watch it over here? because then I try to explain something. She's like, just wait until the movie's over to tell me this.
Why do women put up with us comic book geeks, man?
Well, hey, at least we're getting women. That's a good thing. But I'm really, really looking forward. Now, I have not seen the newest trailer proper yet, and I will later. But I'm trying to stay away from as much as possible. Like, you know how how we said, no more trailers because you don't want to get movied out before the film gets here. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's automatic. It's like, Marvel, you got my money. there was no... After the first Avengers, it's like, sequel is automatic, the vacuum cleaner aimed at my wallet. There you go. Uh-huh. And it just... they've got my money.
They have my money too. Sold to the man with poor impulse control. Lay it on me.
Yep.
Ay, ay, ay.
All right, we are almost there till Avengers Age of Ultron.
Yes.
So it's bow before the Machine King. So they there you go, ladies and gentlemen.
Sounds like that's what you've been doing. So. But.
Oh, snap.
So let us know what you thought about the latest Avengers Age of Ultron trailer and how much excited. And do you agree with me that there should not be shown any more trailers, any new trailers?
I do agree with you on that. It's a really good, like I was saying, I'm like you. I don't want to be movied out before the movie gets here. And I understand that they're going to want to pump up the excitement. They're already excitement. It's Marvel movie in general.
Yeah, exactly. People like my dad is already super excited.
My kids are. They when I told them that I was going to let them see the movie with me, this opening weekend, they were like, "Oh, right," because that's what I did with Guardians. You know, I let them go see it, and it turned out to be one of their all-time favorites.
Funny enough, my dad and I, if it's in 3D, because for some reason my dad loves 3D. Yeah, he loves 3D. I don't know. I've never understood why. I don't like dog on him because he's my dad. But me and my dad, dad and I are going to do an Avengers double feature. Not the whole goddamn all the 24
movies. 24-hour marathon.
No. Yeah. I couldn't do all that. But we're going to be doing the theater we're going to go to is doing Avengers and then Avengers Age of Ultron. If it's in 3D, that's the plan. So I'm super pumped.
That's good.
So I get to experience Avengers Age of Ultron with my dad, and I cannot wait for that. So let's move on to our book of the week, which is not anything Avengers related, but instead on the new Spider-Woman number 5. Obviously, this is the debut of the new costume and the new status quo. So basically, to set up the premise, Spider-Woman is tired. She's been in the Avengers for a while, ever since they relaunched. Bendis took over the book almost a decade ago, but obviously not a decade in our time. But this is Jessica Drew has effectively quit the Avengers and basically is going out on her own because she got tired of doing all that, of dealing with the sort of larger than life aspects of being a superhero, and she needed a break. And in instance, we see her seemingly rescuing a damsel in distress from an unknown villain, who she promptly dismantles. And I normally hate breaking the fourth walls kind of stuff, but I did find that she Googled her own name and she found Jessica Drew's butt or Spider-Woman's butt. And she shame Googling because he doesn't Google themselves, so I could believe that. And what you don't realize is that Spider-Woman is rusty when it comes to the solo game, as Ben Urich, who was who's actually in this book. So she's basically rusty, and she's trying to get back into the swing of things of being on her own without just dealing with normal stuff. And she fights some villains, and it leads to a mystery that I won't get about missing villains, either villain significant others or children, which I thought that's interesting. That's a fun angle to look at. I thought this book had a lot of charm. Like, it got to me, it sounded like Jessica. I like this. I don't like that she's tired, but I like that Jessica, like, is reflecting what everybody in life is like. Everybody in life acts like sometimes, like, look, I know what I'm doing. If you like what you're doing, something, I like what I'm doing as a living, but man, I need a fucking break. I can't keep doing this. And I need to change the pace. And for her, it's going back to being on her own again. So I did like that. I really enjoyed one of my favorite sequences was her in the jail where she's playing, where it looks like she's going to gonna fight. I was like, she's gonna fight this little black lady. I'm like, oh, this is gonna be fun. And they're playing charades, which I thought was hilarious. And she and the best joke, of course, where she's like, well, why didn't you just mime a boxing match? And she basically, you know, so because they would have said Rocky, you know. So, but I love the new direction. I love the art. I loved her voice, and I would love to see. I still don't like the costume. I really wish they would have kept back her old one. But considering she needs a complete, you know, rollover, I don't blame it. I don't think it's a terrible design. It's just a design that I don't agree with. There are some aesthetics of it that I like, but I do like Jessica as a character, so I will keep reading this book. I give it a 4 out of 5. It was a very, very good start, an extremely good start. And I can't wait to see where this goes. And again, Jessica Drew is one of my favorite characters in comics, so I'll be keeping with this book. And as long as Dennis Hopeless and Javier Rodriguez keep drawing the book, I will keep reading it. Brian, what did you think of Spider-Woman number 5?
I actually really liked it as well. It has a distinct kind of, like, almost a Daredevil vibe to it back when they first relaunched the book, so that in itself got me to pick it up. But the characterization here is just brilliant. I mean, Jessica Drew, she mentions something, I think, about an intergalactic spider orgy or something like that, and I get the point she's trying to make where it's like, you know, after fighting all this stuff, it's kind of hard to try and find your center again, try and ground yourself. So that's what she's gone about and tried to do. She's trying to ground herself in the real world where, you know, she thinks she belongs, because she makes a point of saying she's dated, like, all superheroes except for Hawkeye. She throws that little aside in there just to mess with them. But I like the inclusion of Ben Urich. I think he's a real solid inclusion here. He's going to provide a lot, I hope. You know, who doesn't like Ben Urich, right? That being said, as for the direction of the book headed right now, I'm interested. You know, stylistically, it certainly is something that is very appealing. But substance-wise, I'm not sure how I feel about Jessica, because she came off in this issue, especially in the latter half of the book, really kind of, like, bitchy and surly. And I'm not so certain I was crazy about that. If that's the tone they're going to keep up with, I might drop out. But if they keep it pretty even keel, I'll stick around for it. But other than that, I really had no major issues with it. I liked it a lot. The artwork, it captures your attention and keeps you looking. And the writing, Dennis Hopeless is fantastic, as per usual from Mr. Dennis Hopeless. So I will give it a 4 out of 5. I thought it was a really solid read.
Okay.
Your turn, John boy. Your turn, boy.
I will say this. I loved the issue. It was pretty fun. It was a fun read. It was nice to see Jessica not be super serious spy girl for once in the PI. I loved her talking to Ulrich, trying to do, you know, do the remodeling of her apartment, and I liked how she was put in jail, and she played charades with the inmates, and the storyline with the missing families and stuff with the villains looks like it's going to be a cool idea, and it was always nice. It's always nice to see the Porcupine back. One of my favorite, you know, C-list villains from back in the day. Yeah, I always liked the suit. It was something from back in the day. Yeah, it was cheesy, but at least it, you know. The new costume I'm kind of meh on. It just looks too much more like a female version of Spider-Man without the full bodysuit. But I understand why they changed it, because of the whole controversy with the older suit and blah blah blah. And but I might actually have to pick up number 6. This new costume, new status quo thing they're doing, I might actually have to pick up on it, because I liked the art, and Hopeless's writing on here was pretty good. I loved her saying, "Oh yeah, great. When you hang around with him for too long, you start picking up his habit of making bad jokes," and you know that line cracked me up. So I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5, you know, because it, especially since it was a cold read for me, because I didn't read the first, you know, first few issues, and for what it did, it I might have to pick up the next issue just to see how it goes. Here we go.
Okie dokie, Dan.
So let us know what you thought of Spider-Woman, the new direction, her looks, the mentality. I love it. I'm sticking with it, guys. It's much better, in my opinion. It's much better than Spider-Gwen. I really preferred it over Spider-Gwen. You got to know who Jessica was. Even if you didn't read her adventures prior to this, and you weren't a fan of her to begin with, you got to know her story. You got to know where she's going, and you got to know what it's gonna be like, what it's like to be Jessica. So I like it. More Jessica Drew is not a bad thing.
No, it's not. So, she's one of the better characters out there.
Yes. I like that they hinted her fucked up backstory, that her parents basically played evil scientists with a supervisor with her, which is really fucked up when you think about it.
It is.
And the line where she said, with the Hail Hydra High School and to Nick Fury University, that just, I cracked up. Yeah.
That's great. So let us know what you thought of the new Spider-Woman. So let's move on to individual reviews, and I am going with, once again, Asgard Assassin, which, again, considering her state position, makes no fucking sense as the title. Just saying. All right.
Like, it matters at this point.
Yeah, I know, but still, it still irks me. Like, just call it Angela. Angela. All right. So
Angela.
I know
Angela, man. Spawn a new look. Anyway.
Go on, Iggy.
Okay, because I thought you were saying something. I said in the previous chapter that I usually hate when, they break the fourth wall, but I like the whole Jessica looking up her name and, Spider-Woman butt-shaming. I thought that was funny, considering the Mila Minara aspect of the debacle. But here in the first page, not first page, the first page is a really cool Phil Jimenez of Thor standing over a mountain, screaming, and all, just Phil Jimenez as beautiful as he draws things. And then you cut to a scene with Angela in her new stupid costume. Her new costume's fucking stupid. It's even worse than Old One. And then you have captions, of telling who these people are. Gamora, Angela's BFF, best friends for fighting. Cute. Whatever. Groot, he is. Star-Lord, calls self with that with a straight face. Drax, hobbies include destroying. Seems well enough, right? And then you get to Rocket, which says, Scotty Young's retirement fund. Which I'm like, that's cute, but thank you for taking me out of the story. small rant, I don't like that stuff. Please, don't do that again. Like, I want to immerse myself in the story, and because I know the tricks of the game, or at least I know who Scotty Young is, I know he writes Rocket Raccoon, I know that to me is just like, really? You couldn't think of something else to write, and you thought you just wanted to be cute? Either way. So Angela is playing poker with the Guardians of the Galaxy, and they're invaded by Dark Elves, which leads to some great, great action sequences by Phil Jimenez. Just like awesome stuff. Just some really great showdown fighting stuff, including where Angela decapitates a dark elf, which is pretty badass.
Ooh,
yeah. Damn. We get an interlude explaining the origin of this Angela's baby sister. And it turns out the baby was conceived in Muffelsheim.
Huh?
Yeah. So technically, the baby is a child of Odin, Freya,
mm-hmm.
and Surtur. So, and they have this baby.
What?
Yeah. That's the twist. Okay. I'm going to read it for you. But they embraced in space between spaces, entwined in the realm that is not a realm. There, they purge the curse and power of Surtur. But to know love in that place, with that presence lingering around them, the child of that love has three parents, Odin, Freyja, and Surtur. The child is a weapon, a bomb, a monster. Asgardians are too tender to full of pretty words. They have always used their hands of people, the hands of the angels, to do the darkest work. We must do what is needed. We must take the monster and its power into heaven itself. We must get rid of it. the answer you must give. So basically, this kid, and it confirms it by the kid exploding out of this little mini cage that Groot made out of his hand, exploding out, looking like a hell demon, saying everything will burn, sear the womb of existence, tear my way out to the world of ashes, then transforms back into a very creepy-looking Spawn baby. Yeah, so this thing is the herald of the apocalypse, or something, in this... So that's why Angela, at least I can allude to why Angela kidnapped it in the because this baby is the child of three parents, Surtur, Odin, and Freyja, and it's a bomb, it's a weapon, and so they must kill it, which is all kinds of fucked up. So yeah, there's that. It was a nice plot twist. The art is, Phil Jimenez's art is still great as always. Again, now he's not doing his, I'm going to do George Perez stuff, but still looks awesome, and it still looks awesome today. The art is the dialogue is a little wonky. Like it's sometimes a little too cheeky in some of my places, but I still find it enjoyable. But really, the in terms of art standings is that nobody seems to be talking about, at least that I've seen, is Stephanie Hans, and she does like the sort of backstory pages for Angela, and she gets to draw her older costume, and you get to fill in a little bit more about Angela's backstory and her friend Sarah, and that is the art that blows me away. It blows me away just as much as the Phil Jimenez stuff that I feel my poor boy. Like I kind of hope that when Phil eventually, because Phil's not going to stand this book for a long time, he never does, that when Phil leaves, that Stephanie takes full control of the book, because her work deserves more pages. So yeah, I was saying, I'm going to try this issue, and if it doesn't hook me, I will drop out, because I didn't really see a point, and here they actually gave me a reason why, the reason why to continue the book, and I'm going to continue it. But I give it a 3 out of 5, mainly for the art. The story is still weak. It became more interesting with the introduction that what this baby is, that what Angela's little sister is. So, yeah, I give it a 3 out of 5. It was some good stuff, some very good fight sequences from Phil and stuff like that. So, yeah. Jonathan, take it away.
I'm doing Thor number 5, as written by Jason Aaron, and art is by guest artist Jorge Molina. And it's more of the same as we're trying to figure out who the new Thor is. Odin's pissed off, being asshole Odin, and wanting to figure out who the vile sorceress is who took over and stole Mjolnir. And we see the new Thor on Earth fighting, absorbing man. And, she's like, and he's like, really? At least I respect Thor, the guy. And he's like, are you kidding me? I'm supposed to call you Thor? Damn feminists are ruining everything. And he's like, you want to be a chick superhero? Fine. Who the hair cares? But get your own identity. Thor's a dude, one of the last manly dudes left. What did you do? Send him to sensitivity training so he'd stop calling Earth girls wenches? And she punches him, and he's like, oh, I can't wait to taste the hammer again, and I'm going to, cram the magic right down your throat. How do you like that, Tinkerbell? And then she throws the hammer at him, and the hammer's all over the place, breaks his jaw. Woo! And then Titania pops up, and it's like, oh, who's this supposed to be? And she's like, she broke my jaw. And then Thunder, is like, okay, well, or Titania tries to go, hey, we'll just take care of you. Knocks out her husband and says, I'm going to give you a freebie this time simply because, I see what you're trying to do, blah, blah, blah. And maybe Jill will be good for both of us because that way, because every time he gets out too long, he's wandering away. And she lets Thor punch her out. And then Odin, of course, is being Odin again. He's talking to Thor proper, and both Freya and him are trying to tell her we gave her permission, blah blah blah, and Odin's like ungrateful people, blah. And then you find out that the guy who did the whole fear itself thing is now one of Odin's right hand men now.
Because that worked out so well the first time he came back. So Keep it up there, guys.
Yeah. So Odin tells him to send the viziers down to the dungeons and all this, and then you see Thor getting drunk, talking to Sif, and he goes, "Damn Nick Fury, why did he have to blah blah blah?" And you see Thor writing off his list, and he knocks Sif off the list of being Thor. The new Thor is on the moon talking to Freya, and Freya pretty much goes, "Damn it, I wish I could have gotten the hammer when I had a chance."
But,
yeah.
Not so subtle wink at everyone thinking it was Thor's mom.
Yeah, but then she's like, I'm letting you know that you might want to watch out. Odin's going to be coming after you, and he's not going to be blah, 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 blah. And then Thor himself is like, "Damn it, Nick Fury." And they're like, "Well, what did he whisper?" And he's like, "Not going to worry about it. I'm just going to try to go to, I don't want to, just let me go to bed so I don't have to hear any more whispers or fall in bed without dreaming of hammers." And you see Odin and his brother going down to deep in the bowels of Asgardia. Next issue is going to be the new Thor versus Destroyer. Odin sending the Destroyer to bring back the hammer of Thor and the broken body of the thief who holds it. And I'm going to tell you right now, I had my doubts when I first heard about this, Thor being female and all that. And it's not that I had anything against Thor being female, because Storm's been Thor, at one point, and that kind of thing. We've had Thor girl, that kind of routine. No biggie. But I was not happy with it at first, but damn it, Aaron has won me over. I've been reading this thing from month to month. The art was good, and if this guy is the guest artist, and if he wants to take over as permanent artist, I'll be more than happy to see him on here. And I give this issue 4.5 out of 5, because nothing's 100% perfect, but mainly because they had to bring that jackass from Fear Itself back in. And I will say that I'm looking forward to the next issue. This is one of the better issues, better titles out there, along with the new Captain America that has been running. So pick it up. If you want to wait till trade, but pick it up. It's a good stuff. There you go.
Bye-bye. Round it up.
All new Hawkeye number one is the word you're looking for there, pal?
Wait. You know what's funny about this book?
What?
The shitty old one still hasn't wrapped up.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Matt Fraction has never been quite punctual when it comes to these kind of books. Although, personally, I think is it David Aja who's doing the artwork? I'm pretty sure it's him.
It has to be him. That's the reason. It's like,
if
it is, because if his other books seem to be coming out fine, his image books seem to be coming out.
I think it was Fraction who did World's Most Wanted, the Iron Man arc, and I think he was consistent on that one.
So it's definitely David Aja.
Yeah. David, whatever. But regardless of how whatever you think about Fraction and Ahad's Hawkeye series, this series starts off to a very nice start. Let me just say first off, you open up to a flashback sequence from when Clint and Barney are being traded from foster home to foster home, and they're in one of these particular foster homes at the given moment. And it's not so much the content, but the story is illustrated in such a style that it's like dreamy, kind of like ripples on the water kind of style. It's very nicely done. It's done in all these pale, purplish, pinkish colors, and it's beautifully illustrated. So right off the bat, huge, huge, huge props to the artist on this book, Ramon Perez. He did a fantastic job. And also big ups to Ian Herring, who worked with Perez on the coloring for that issue, for the issue. So very well done. But once you move past the flashback, it's your standard sort of opening arc where Clint is doing a favor for Maria Hill and S.H.I.E.L.D. Him and Kate Bishop, who is accompanying him, are raiding a Hydra facility in the Antarctic, supposedly a secret weapons cache, but they haven't found any sign of any weapons, so Clint decides to pull the plug on the mission, but unfortunately, Kate Bishop gets trapped inside after he makes a break for it, and so he has to go back and get her out. And when she gets lost inside this Hydra facility, because she says out and out, it's like a labyrinth down there, it's mazes and mazes. She stumbles upon these children in this sort of like cage, and it's like their minds are, their heads are all warped, and their minds look like they've been, like, it's pretty disgusting what's been done to them. But she finds out that apparently these children are living biological weapons or some such. It's where the first issue cuts out, with Kate discovering these kids. And it's compounded beautifully between Clint trying to find Kate Bishop and rescue her, and Barney and Clint fleeing the foster home that they're the most recently in, because the guy there who's hosting them is an alcoholic abusive asshole. So they break out, and the flashback sequence that's sort of peppered throughout the book ends with them finally ending up at the Carson Carnival, where Barney and Clint will eventually hone their skills in being archers. So just, it is a phenomenally done book. The artwork is a huge, huge draw to this one, but the writing ain't too shabby either. Big ups to Jeff Lemire for that one. He does wonderfully picking up the pace. It didn't even feel like this is really, Fraction leaving the book. It felt like just a direct continuation of Fraction and Aha series. Granted, the artwork change is noticeable.
But less cutesy?
It is much more into the superhero thing off the bat than
Fraction. So one thing I hate about Hawkeye, it got way too fucking cutesy with shit.
Yeah, that one was much more like Hawkeye's personal life and Kate Bishop and shit.
Not even that stuff, but just like, the dog, the stupid dog issue.
Lemire doesn't mess around. He saves that shit for where it's supposed to be, in the background. It's the background flashback kind of thing Clint does.
I will say this, though.
Yeah.
The Ramon Perez did the art. The sequences where it's painted. Oh my god!
Right, that's what I'm saying, dude. It's fucking wonderfully done.
Oh geez, I flipped through. I didn't buy it, but I flipped through because I knew Ramon Perez is a brilliant artist, and I was like,
oh, it's gorgeous.
It is beautiful.
Gorgeous.
It's beautiful.
So like I was saying, the cutesy stuff is kind of kept where it's supposed to be, and the flashbacks aren't even that cute, because like I said, they're in an abusive foster home, and they end up running away afterwards. But the stuff, the banter with Kate Bishop in the issue, and Hawkeye doing his thing, it's all here for you. You know, Lemire, he doesn't mess around. He drops you right in the middle of a Hawkeye and Hawk Guy Hydra facility raid, and it's awesome. So I highly, highly recommend this book. Not even a bad thing to say about it. I drop it a 5 out of 5, easy.
Wow.
If you're really stoked about painted artwork or really like something to look at, pick up this book, because the sequences with Barney and Clint Barton are beautifully done, and the writing is just stellar. It's top-notch. I really can't recommend it enough.
God,
so I give it a 5 out of 5.
I told myself, I'm done with Hawkeye. Now I gotta read it again.
Now you gotta read it again.
Our heart bleeds for you, dude.
Oh my goodness.
All right. It sounds like a good one. I might have to check it out myself.
At least
flip through it off the rack, because the artwork is really good, John. I recommend it.
Well, it's like I did read the trade for Hawkeye, the Fraction one. Although I did like the dog issue, but that was because I'm a dog person.
A dog person too. I love that shit.
But I was like, okay, you're going that way, and you got the Russian guy going, Burrow, Burrow.
You know what it did? In my opinion, it got too much of its own ass.
Yeah.
It really got too much. Too much story. Like, it's a simple fucking story, and you compromise. It got too much of its own ass, and you got the long delay where I'm consuming other media and other comics, and it's like, I don't know what's going on. And it's a simple little fuck story. That means you got a problem right there. So it's like,
I agree.
So there you go.
Yeah, I hear that, dude.
And like that
I still enjoyed
that book
it.
That started out so good too.
Enjoy it to an extent, but it's just the issues are so far apart now, and I honestly kind of forget what I'm supposed to be looking for. You know, I don't remember why. It's good, but it's also kind of sad that it's lost that much steam that quickly. Because it started out very strong.
That's what a delay and then trying to do cute. That's what a delay and trying to be cute while during a delay where you can't tell a story properly.
You have a cute issue, and that's fine, but I don't think it's the cutesy part. It's the part that's straight.
I think
it strayed too far away, and I will agree with you that it was up its own ass near the end.
That's what I really mean. When you try to be up your own ass, and then you're also late by 5 months, you're going to lose track of the reader on a very simple story, and that's not good storytelling, in my opinion.
I agree.
Okay, that's fair.
I hate it when you're delayed. I mean, and I understand that, you know, sometimes artists will be delayed on stuff, and, you know, but when you're going more than just a month or two, you might want to, you know, get a different artist.
It's, I know it's ending the next issue for that Hawkeye book.
Yeah. So, and I heard good stuff, and I liked it. It's just, but like you said, it's going. I hate it when I have a title that gets delayed, you know, because the artist can't do it or something. And if it's a limited series, I can deal with it, and if it's like maybe a month or two, may at most, I can understand, because sometimes deadlines get hard to do. But when you're missing like five, did you say 5 months?
Yeah, it was 5 months there for a while. Good God,
I would have been like, get a different artist who can pull his ass up to get it out, because
yeah,
you know, it just, you know, I mean, I'm a big fan of a lot of artists, but they're. There are ones that I will, if I know they're doing something, I will wait till trade, so that way I know I can sit down and read it in one fell swoop instead of waiting a year and a half between issues. You know, Image burned me a long time ago when, you know, back then. And it just, I mean, as much as I would love, you know, love art, you know, certain art, you know, artwork, if you're not going to get it out on time, then I'll wait.
That little rant aside, well, let's move on to our final segment, which is our continuing poll of our top 10 favorite Marvel stories of all time. Woo-hoo! Now, John obviously missed his fifth one last week, so John is going to tell us his fifth and fourth favorite comic stories of all time. John?
All right, I'm going to go ahead and be brief on number five, simply because I missed last week. Back in the day when I started reading comics, early 80s, late 70s, you had your Avengers, you had your Spider-Man, you had your X-Men, and while I have mentioned Claremont and Byrne's X-Men run being one of my top 10 favorite, the one title I read, you know, all the time before I became a fan of the X-Men and all that was The Defenders, and I chose for the number five pick of my all-time Marvel was when Defenders went from being the non-team into the new Defenders, which was Defenders 125, 124 in that area. You have this whole situation where this mysterious tribunal is going to put the original Defenders on trial. And while you're seeing this, you see Beast, Angel, and Iceman reunite and kind of start, you know, team, you know, helping out Valkyrie and Gargoyle with stuff, and Beast is really trying to make the Defenders, instead of a non-team as they were, into an actual legit team. And while this is going on, you see Doctor Strange, Hulk, the Silver Surfer, and Namor being put on trial by this tribunal, and they find out that in unspecified many years, the Earth will be destroyed because of them. And it turned, you know, and you know, they stopped this alien race from invading the planet, and this person that found, you know, the father of the alien race, you know, found out that his son had died, so he, due to their tradition, sends this fleet to Earth to eliminate all traces of his son, because when the person dies in that alien race, all traces of their history and personal whatever is destroyed, you know, like they've never existed. So the Defenders find out that they wound up being responsible for the Earth being destroyed because of if they were to reunite. And so after all this, and then you have the wedding of Hellcat and Damon Hellstrom going on, you see Valkyrie bringing in Moondragon, who had a who was doing repentance with from Odin because of her stuff in the Avengers that she did. And you start seeing the gelling of this new team. And after they go through their little adventures at the wedding, the original Defenders come up and go, well, we can't work together anymore, and we wish you luck, and they disappear, and so you wind up with the new team of the new Defenders, which I will have to say was one of my all-time favorite lineups of any super team. Gargoyle, Valkyrie, Angel, Iceman, Beast, and Moondragon, who was kind of the loose cannon. And
almost like the old Champions team.
Yeah, almost, but it was better.
I've read
Champions. It was not a good title. But but the New Defenders was one of my favorite titles, and if you didn't have the New Defenders in play the way they did it, you wouldn't have gotten X-Factor a couple of years later, because that's how it went. The New Defenders ended tragically, and you see Beast or Angel and Iceman trying to pick up the pieces, and then Cyclops and Jean Grey, you know, meet up with them, and they become, you know, it spins into X-Factor and all that. But as a guy who was, the New Defenders was the only title I was picking up monthly, you know, month to month at the newsstand at the time, aside from Crisis on Infinite Earths from somewhere else. And it was very well done, and it's what my number five pick. It influenced me more. It's what got me into reading X-Men and other stuff, and go back and reread other things, and made me a bigger Marvel fan. My number four pick, and going to be a big surprise that it's even this low, is going to be Walt Simonson's run on Thor.
Only at number four.
Taser
will be so upset.
he's gonna be shocked.
But only number four. You better have
only
some
number four,
hits, man.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's just the top five. It was all jockeying for position. Got harder and harder to decide what it was. But
fair enough.
Walt Simonson, what can you say about the run on Thor? You got the first appearance of Beta Ray Bill, the slow buildup of Surtur in the background, banging on the twilight. Yeah, doom. You got more of the proper Norse mythology being shown in the Marvel version of Asgard. Loki was just, I don't know if Loki was done, had been done any better than when Simonson did him. He was the god of mischief, but he was also a major pain in the ass for everybody. You saw, you know, the introduction of Lorelei, you know, the Enchantress's sister, the fall of the Rainbow Bridge, where with the Asgardians being stranded on Earth, the death of Odin, which one of the best panels ever was where when Odin disappears, both Thor and Loki forget their differences and are shouting father at the same time because they both love, you know, Odin. The fall of the Executioner, as I know that was Taser's pick a couple episodes ago. And words cannot really describe the run. This is what made me go, huh? You know, on stuff. And what cemented it was one of the things that really made Thor one of my all-time favorite Marvel heroes. And you got him with the armor, with the beard. You got to see Curse. You got to see Malachi. You know, for good or ill, I was never the biggest fan of him, but I know a lot of people that really did like him. The art was wonderful. I know I've had some people that look at Simonson's art and they're like, What's with the chicken scratch? What's the big deal? And I'm like, look at Thor and read it, and you'll understand why a lot of people to this day say that's probably one of the best renditions of Thor, and why we all went gaga when Invincible Hulk, when he did the two-issue stint, you know, guest artist, and we got to see his version of Thor in a long time. And I can't speak of this more highly. I know it's going to be, you know, sounds like hyperbole, because I know sometimes things don't age well, you know, when you look back on certain things. But when we say that we're going to picking up the best of the best, Simonson's run on Thor is the run that all other, with the exception of maybe Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's run, that all others have to be compared to. And I mean, it's a very high bar. and there has not been many runs of Thor since that have come even anywhere near close. And you can tell Matt Fraction tried his best to do his variation of you know, Simonson's Thor. He kind of failed. The closest runs I could say that would be almost anywhere near match it was probably John Straczynski's run when they brought back Thor right around the time of Civil War.
Really? You're ranking JMS up there right alongside Simonson.
No, I didn't say alongside. It came close, you know, with what some of the stuff he did.
Still, that's, in my opinion, has given him way too much.
Well, that's fine, and that's what everybody's got their opinion. I might be a little...
was still really great.
Yeah.
It didn't finish the best, but there were some really good issues in that run.
Yeah, no kidding.
Especially, I apologize to hijack it, John, but...
Oh, you're fine.
Thor number 600, where the showdown against Boar in New York City.
Uh-huh.
That was an awesome, awesome issue.
Yeah. And then the other run, and you'll have to probably agree, would be the God Bomb, God Killer arcs.
Jason Aaron's stuff. That was brilliant.
Yeah, are pretty damn close. I mean, when I say pretty damn close, that does not mean that it matches in quality per se.
Fair enough.
They had glimpses. Dan Jurgens did a run that, unfortunately, he went too long with it on some of his stuff. But even he touched off of some elements from Simonson's run in his run. And the only other run that I enjoyed almost as thoroughly as much as I did Simonson was when Tom DeFalco did his run back in the day, back in the 90s with Ron Frenz. And because Thor, when you get him done right, he's the badass. He's that Viking, you know, warrior that's just going to kick the crap out of everybody. He's the warrior. And Simonson had him on all cylinders. And there's not much more else I can say about it other than just pick up the trades, you know, go back, reread those, and understand why we speak so highly of it. I mean, and why sometimes I get so agitated when I see, you know, things get done screwball with some of the characters because, you know, you remember various runs. But anyway, I'll get off my old-timey box now. And but, yeah, Walt Simonson's run on Thor is my number four pick.
Well, my number four is about a veteran. A grizzled veteran.
Oh,
who
God.
We sadly had to say goodbye to in his old state in Original Sin. And you can probably already tell who it is based on that. But my number fourth pick is Secret Warriors by Jonathan Hickman. Now, don't get me wrong. I love Steranko's Nick Fury stuff. That stuff is classic. And if you look at what he was doing and what the other artists were doing at the time, you can see how revolutionary Jim Steranko's stuff was. But that being said, when it comes to a modern Nick Fury story, there's really not a lot there. There's stories, but there's not a plethora of it like there should be, considering how rich of his history is. But here we have a Nick Fury who is officially, at this point, this is after Dark Reign, where the villains are now in charge, where he is on the run, where he's basically leading a team of these superpowered people that he's keeping tabs on, and it's up to him to basically kind of hold the world together, and he's dealing with all his own personal crisis as he continues on. And it really just got Nick Fury. The book is somewhat lesser when it's not dealing with Fury and it's dealing with the kids, which is, you know, that's what the book's supposed to be about. But Hickman just got understood what Fury is and what Fury should be. And of course, you know, needless to say about the whole Hydra and S.H.I.E.L.D. being entwined all the whole time, it was just a great cat and mouse game between Nick Fury. And again, it all boils down to is that it was a great modern Nick Fury story. And it was one of those runs when it first started where I wasn't sure where this is going, and I'm glad I stuck with it it's if you want a good Nick Fury story, this is it. A lot of cool science stuff, a lot of cool tech stuff, a lot of espionage stuff, a lot of betrayals, a lot of deaths, some interesting flashbacks. It's and you know, it kind of, and it ends in a weird way, but I think it ends, you know, in a relatively interesting place. But knowing where Nick Fury is at now, we're probably not going to get a story like this for a long time. So because of that, and also the art was a lot by Stefano Caselli, and the majority of it, who did the latter half of the run, was Alessandro Vitti. He just captured that sort of grizzled and heavy and tired look that Fury had. And I just love this book. It's not the most grandiose of books, but if you want a titular run of the character, I really recommend Secret Warriors by Jonathan Hickman and Company. It was a damn good run, and that is my number 4th overall.
Ooh, that's a tough act to follow there, Ben. Ben, you there?
So you're going to follow it, right?
Oh, sure. I mean, I don't know how I possibly could with that, but I'll certainly try, I suppose. Now, this one I don't think will cause many people being like, what? But they'll definitely be comparing it to a couple of other things perceived to be better. I'm going to try and combat that. I'm trying to figure out how to begin. I will start off like this. There has not been, I maintain, there has not been another performance of a character who was perceived to be weak or not worth someone's time, taking on these powerful characters and just giving them the business like there has been since Thanos rolled around. Thanos is a top dog, no doubt. And what put it over for me, first and foremost, was Thanos Quest by Jim Starlin and Ron Lim. It's a 2-issue miniseries they did. It was served as the prelude to Infinity Gauntlet. This was what set that up. Now, this is how Thanos gets his power. I mean, this is him collecting the Infinity Gems in an attempt to become so powerful that he can kill a bunch of people and please Mistress Death, his love. And I also kind of have to wonder if Jim Starlin knew what he was doing when he first created Thanos, if he thought it was like a one-off character, or if he like perceived him to be this character who could go on to be something great and had this vision for him, because Thanos takes on the Elders of the Universe. That is the guys, short of the actual forces of the cosmos. These are the guys who are some of the most powerful beings in the galaxy, okay? He starts off with freeing the in-betweener from a prison, only to pry the soul gem from him, and then he turns them over to Lord Chaos and Master Order to be punished eternally, torn to shreds, whatever you want to say. He sends the champion of the universe hurtling to the next nearest planet after tricking him into destroying the planet he was already on and taking the power gem from him as payment for his transportation that Thanos provided, i.e. shooting him to a planet. He manipulates the gardener, using the power gem, accelerating the power of the gardener's time gem, and aging him into decay so that there's not even a fight. It's a conversation, a very pleasant one at that. And just ends with Thanos just plucking the gem from the guy's dead body. Thanos morphs the runner into a child with the power of the time gem and relieves him of his space gem, trades him to the collector in exchange for the collector's reality gem, which he could not figure out how to use, and then he warps the runner back into the age he had been when Thanos first defeated him, leaving him to the collector, who the runner now knows tried to hold him captive and dissect him for all intents and purposes. And Thanos caps all that off by completely just fucking over the Grandmaster and completely fucking humiliating him. Okay? At once, he lets the Grandmaster think he'd gotten the better of Thanos, and then he reveals that he thought several moves ahead of the Grandmaster, cheating him out of a victory, and out and out, not, I don't think he kills him, but he certainly doesn't leave him in one piece of effect. I think he might actually kill him. And at the end of it all, Thanos returns to death, his mistress, his love, whatever you want to call her, and he asks if him earning these gems earns her affection, and she doesn't even talk to him. Because, as her minions put it, now that Thanos has collected all these Infinity Gems, he's above her in station. He wields the power of the universe in his hands. And the only thing he ever wanted was for Mistress Death to love him. And she won't even talk to him because he's gone too far. I mean, short of all that, it's a tour of the Marvel Cosmic, and it is a superb character study. I think it's the first, to my knowledge, to really go in depth about Thanos' character, although I may be wrong. I know he's died and come back several times, so I could be missing something in there. Understandably so. But it gives you a sense of what's driving him, and the miniseries shows just what makes him so frightening, is that he doesn't need the power of a god to defeat a god, okay? He just needs the motivation to defeat a god, and he will find a way to win, okay? And that, to me, really, really is just something to behold, and it's actually why I rank this over Infinity Gauntlet. The Infinity Gauntlet is Thanos taking on a great number of heroes with the power he amassed in this miniseries. The Infinity Gauntlet saga ends in his failure, ultimately, his own hubris getting the better of him. You know, he's overconfident, and it proves to be his weakness. Whereas Thanos' quest involves him taking on the others of the universe at a disadvantage, and, again, not only emerging victorious, but just completely fucking humiliating him. And then, of course, there's Jim Starlin's superb writing and Ron Lim's fantastic artwork. And it just all comes together. And they did all this in 2 issues, I remind you. Thanos completely reworked the structure of the galaxy in almost 2 issues. So keep that in mind, kids. This guy is fucking scary. But it is a wonderful read. It's fun. It takes you to these far-off corners of the galaxy. And it really shows just how terrifying a force that this guy is. And I think it's with this miniseries in particular, he really cemented his own position as the Mad Titan, one of the biggest threats to galactic civilization. And while Infinity Gauntlet would not just justify all of that, I really think this is where he earned his reputation, and rightfully so. And for that reason, I rank Thanos Quest number 4.
Well, there
it's
you go.
It's a good choice, too.
Some historic runs and a story. I really want to read Thanos Quest at some point. I need
Thanos
to.
Quest is really
that's the
good
prelude stuff to Infinity Gauntlet, right?
It is.
Yes, it
directly
is.
Sets up the events of Infinity Gauntlet. Yeah.
And you also can read the Silver Surfer at the time, too, because that's where they kind of set everything up on that as well. It was a pretty good...
They have that marketed actually as a trade, Silver Surfer, The Rebirth of Thanos. Uh-huh. And includes the four... What is that noise?
That's me, sorry.
Oh. It involves the Silver Surfer learning of Thanos' rebirth and dealing kind of with that for the 4 issues. And then it also includes Thanos Quest in that book as well. It's a tight little trade paperback. So it's really good.
All right.
I highly recommend it, too.
I'll read it eventually. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this episode of the Mighty Warriors 2 Marvel Podcast. We are almost there to
number
200.
Only 3 more episodes.
So start the hype train rolling, people. Tell your friends. We have something special planned for you, people. Yeah, as I hiccup. We have something special
He's
plan
so excited,
for you,
he just can't contain himself.
No, I can't. So until next week, hopefully with Taser back in there, we are the Mighty Warriors Tomorrow Podcast. We will see you all next week. Have a great freaking day. Domo already got to Mr. Roboto. Domo. Domo. Domo already got to Mr. Roboto. Domo. Domo. Domo already got to Mr. Roboto. Mr. Roboto, Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto, Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto.
I almost did Guardians team up just because Art Adams did the entire interiors for that.
Yes, I flipped through it, but I was like, yeah, no. Especially since the next issue is a crossover.
Continuity so bad in that. Shari are a separate race instead of just the Ultimate Universe analog for Skrulls.
How did you pronounce that?
The Chitauri?
You said Shariar.
Well, yeah, you sound like you're saying Char.
I'm leaving.
You talked over me. You're confusing me. So
no, I'm leaving this in the ending. All right, so let's get this started.
No, don't do that.
Yes, I will.
Iggy, it's your fault. Never mind. Let's just start.